Hey, this is Lars Fredrickson from the old firm Casuals, Rancid, The Last Resort, Stomper 98, Oxy's Midnight Runners, and a bunch of bands you've never heard of. And you are listening to today's Boondoggle, on Domain Cleveland Radio. Ad lib.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to this intro before the intro of our today's Boondoggle Radio show. As you know, we're a veteran-owned and operated podcast, and this has been an incredibly therapeutic journey for me as a veteran that struggles with PTSD and anxiety, just getting out and talking to people. But it does cost us some money, so if you feel so obliged to donate to our GoFundMe, we have a GoFundMe under today's Boondoggle. We also have a Venmo at today's Boondoggle that you can donate to. Our anchor sponsorship at anchor.fm/today's Boondoggle. Any questions, comments, suggestions, complaints, you can email us at today'sboondoggle@gmail.com. And please follow us on our social media sites at today's Boondoggle on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all your social media platforms, as well as our YouTube channel, our Rumble channel, and our BitChute channel. Please follow, subscribe, comment, and download. And please consider checking out our sponsors. If you support our sponsor, Dream Nutrition, you can receive 10% off your order by using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. So Dream Nutrition, they're a veteran-owned and operated company as well, so please support them. And receive 10% off using the promo code BOONDOG10. Thanks for your time, and thanks for listening.
Listen up! Hold on to your seats! Grab your girls, grab your beers!
What's going on? It's Tommy Beck, and you're listening to today's Boondoggle.
This is Mark Metcalf, and you are listening to today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio.
You are listening to today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio. Yes, Cato Kalen listens to this all the time.
I am Monty Heath,
so Warren Heath,
and you are listening to today's Boondoggle.
Hey, what's up? It's John from Skillet, and you are listening to today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with today's Boondoggle. And real quick housekeeping note, if you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that follow and subscribe button. If you're watching us on Rumble or BitChute, do the same there as well. And if you're listening to us on whatever podcast platform you use, please hit the follow, subscribe button there as well. And I've been told that I need to pimp out our Instagram as well. So, you know, hit us up on social media. My younger people in the know are telling me, you know, I gotta push all that stuff. So, but anyway, it helps, helps us out so we can continue to bring you interviews like the one I'm about to today, catching up with an old friend, Mr. Alexander Haber. How you doing, man?
Doing all right. It's great to be here. Thanks again for having me on here. It's an honor.
Yeah, man. Like as we were talking about before we came on, we met incarceration. Was it 2019? It was the last one before shutdown and everything, and kind of just exchanged pleasantries. You were interviewing bands at your table. I was interviewing bands at mine, and I think exchanged some information then or whatever. But yeah, as soon as I seen your name pop up on the email I got, I was like, yeah, I'd like to catch up with that dude, see what he's doing. And it sounds pretty cool what you got going on. But before we get into that, when I have somebody new on for the first time, I like to get a quick background. So originally, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I mean, I guess it's a similar dream that I had since I was a kid. I've always wanted to be an artist. I mean, that's been my dream. And I'm still working at it every day. It's just, you know, I've always just been into creating stuff. And I've always thought that that was kind of like the field I'm in. So really just kind of like being an artist in a way. I know that's kind of like a very vague statement to say. But yeah, being an artist was kind of like my ideal intentions. And it's still something I pursue every day.
Yeah, so like as a kid, you got into like what, drawing and stuff like that? And
Yeah. I used to use my Crayola crayon boxes while I was watching Bob Ross and trying to emulate what he did.
Nice. And then like when was it, because I know you're a big fan of music and you've done a lot of stuff there in New York City and you know, obviously on the festivals that we met at. When did music kind of catch your ear? And do you remember your earliest influences?
Well, music has been part of my life. I mean, I come from a musical background. My dad is very much involved in the musical gear industry. So I've always been around guitars and basically any instrument you could think of. I've always had access to that. And everybody in my family had different music tastes that they were all very enthusiastic about. So, you know, my dad was very much into the rock. So he would play me everything from the Beatles to AC/DC to the Stones to Zeppelin. My mom was very much into classical music as well as like R&B. But like the first time I remember music like making my jaw drop was actually Whitney Houston when I heard I'm Every Woman and my mom was like picking me up from preschool or something like that. Just hearing that amazingly powerful voice, I was just like, I didn't know humans were capable of that. My brother got me, or he had a copy of Red Hot Chili Peppers Californication. So that kind of got me into like a lot of, at the time I discovered it, that record was like 2 years old. So a lot of the modern rock that was big at that time. And my sister was always into the radio. So she would play like, you know, during the radio when I was like in elementary school, they played rock. Like they would play Papa Roach or Evanescence, Blink-182, like bands along that. And then for me, my ultimate discovery through music was through video games. I had a racing video game that had everything from My Chemical Romance to Atreyu to Rise Against to Jimmy Eat World. And that's kind of what really got me into emo. I would say that the emo, for lack of better words, that emo movement was pretty much like what was the first like movement that I discovered on my own that really influenced me. The Helena music video for My Chemical Romance was kind of like the video that just made me find beauty in all things dark and dismal.
Nice. And then, you know, you mentioned a little bit about your mom's classical music background, and I know, you know, that you're quite the pianist. So is that kind of, does that go hand in hand with, you know, why you picked up piano?
Well, my mom will deny. My mom will always deny that she's a good piano player. My mom is phenomenal. My mom is a fantastic piano player, and I've always loved it when she would play as a child. And yeah, I mean, I've always been into classical music, but what kind of got me more interested, like what kind of made me want to play, we had a Steinway grand piano in my house growing up, and I was very much into games like Legend of Zelda and Final Fantasy. So I would always try to play like music I would hear from Zelda games on the piano. And back then, there was no YouTube to MP3 converter. So I would like put the game on pause and turn the volume all the way up so I could hear it and then try to emulate what I was hearing through the pause screen. You know, just try to learn on piano. Video game music was really like the first type of music that I would try to learn how to play.
That's cool. And then any other instruments you picked up along the way? You said your dad worked on guitars and stuff like that.
Well, he owns a musical retail chain, Alto Music. That's actually where I am right now in one of our offices. So I always had access to gear. You know, my dad is a fantastic guitar player. My dad is also a songwriter and a musician. He has collaborated with a lot of great artists. I attempted guitar. I tried it a few times. I tried it when I was 11 and put it down immediately. And then I tried it again when I was 15, around the same time I started playing piano. It was cool, but it just wasn't like my thing. I really just enjoyed playing piano. It was more comfortable to play. I was able to figure it out easier. And I had a great piano teacher at the time, and he taught me everything I wanted to know, everything from heavy metal to video game music. So piano was just kind of like the music that resonated with me as well. And I also discovered like a lot of film composers like Two Steps from Hell or Hans Zimmer that also kind of made me more enthusiastic about the piano. It seems like I was able to do more with piano than I was able to do with guitar at the time.
Oh, good. And then, what kind of drew you in then to like the like journalist type, you know, getting out there and actually meeting the artists and interviewing them and stuff like that?
So I actually remember the date my first interview was. Remembering dates is like a hobby of mine, but it was August 21st of 2015. My dad in his store was having a clinic for PRS guitars, and he had Mark Holcomb of Periphery and Dusty from Between the Buried and Me doing like a clinic at the store, doing like a playthrough and whatnot. And I was always into their music, and I've always enjoyed watching interviews. MTV was actually kind of past my time. I was born in 93, in case anybody was wondering. But so I didn't like, I was always into watching everything I loved about music I discovered on YouTube. And if it wasn't on YouTube, it was on video games. But on YouTube, I was always into watching all the different podcasts and all the different interview outlets. And I wanted to do that. Like, I've always wanted to do that, but I didn't know how one goes about it. I didn't know how you reach out to a publicist or reach out to that. So with them, with Mark Holcomb and Dusty working in a, sorry, speaker going out, with Mark and Dusty being at my dad's store, I just was able to, I approached them and I asked them, can I do an interview? And it went great. And after we did that interview, like, they told me I should continue doing it. So 2 years later, my dad was taking me out to NAMM, and he was like saying, while you're out here, you should do some work for Alto. There's musicians all over the place. Many of them you probably know. And I have our camera guy here. Why don't you just do these interviews with him? And the rest is history. I met Dino from Fear Factory. I met Jordan from As They Lay Dying and Woven War, Herman from Dragon Force, Jeff from Armored Saint. And it just started snowballing. I met one publicist, and then she introduced me to two more publicists, and then they introduced me to three more publicists, and it all kind of snowballed from there. And then I started my own outlet literally on a layover from Texas on the way back from that NAMM convention. I was kind of like winging it. I was kind of, I even jokingly say I started off as a SoundCloud journalist.
Nice. And then, like, you said starting your own outlet, like, when did Heavy New York come to together for you?
Around the same time as NAMM 2017, I was on a layover in Texas, and we got delayed by a full day, which wasn't fun, but it gave me time to like launch the Facebook page for Heavy New York. And I remember making it public right as we were boarding the plane, and then we landed, and then there was already a bunch of likes on it. And I was just wanted to move forward with it. And because of the connections I made at NAMM 2017, I reached out to many different outlets. And again, they introduced me to some, and a lot of the great publicists who both you and I have worked with were just so generous enough to give me a chance. And I'm still friends with many of them to this day, and am honored to work with people very dedicated and very talented.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, you're sharing your story, and then I'm thinking of back at my beginnings and everything as well. And it's just like, you know, it's like once you get, you know, connected with that one, it opens up a door for another one. And then, you know, next thing your inbox is full every day, you know?
Yeah.
So it's great to build those relationships.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then I know we, you know, touched on it a little bit at the beginning, and you wanted to get more into it, but your artwork, getting into painting, what's that been for you? Is that almost like kind of like giving yourself, like, for me, like, you know, I'm a retired veteran with PTSD and anxiety, so I do this as like almost therapy too, to help me get more comfortable talking to other people, you know, and being in recovery and stuff like that. So this is kind of like my outlet, but has art been like an outlet for you in a similar way?
Oh, 100%. Kind of going back to like my family having the musical background, me being into the visual art, that was kind of like the one standout thing. That was the one thing that my family just didn't understand or relate to. Not that they didn't encourage it. They just, you know, while other kids wanted to go to Disneyland over the summer, I wanted to go to Europe and look at art museums. I had family in Germany, so they would take me to all like the art museums in like Munich, and I just fell in love with all of that. And you know, art, you know, I've gone through a lot of you know, like yourself, I've had my fair share of trials and tribulations with anxiety and depression, and it has been a major outlet for me. And I was like, and my parents being as encouraging as they were just, they let me go to art school. They let me go. I went to the School of Visual Arts in New York City, which is why I moved here. And I was just developing more and more of an identity. And then doing interviews was really almost kind of like what helped me develop an identity as an artist. You know, when I was reading all through art history, you would see all the different things, like Andy Warhol, for example, not to compare myself to him in any way, shape or form, but like Andy Warhol was also working as like a commercial artist. He had like his own identity outside of just being a regular gallery artist and so on and so forth. So working in heavy New York and talking to many different artists, it provided a lot of artistic inspiration for me, and it also gave me more of an identity. So I was able, while I loved creating, I didn't really, it wasn't until fairly recently I found like a lot of meaning within my artwork, and I was able to explain it. That was always my biggest weakness in art school, was being able to explain my art. I just liked creating stuff for the sake of, you know, just energy. But as I interviewed more and more bands and learned about their creative process and why they created and how they created, it definitely opened my mind up to new ideas and experiences. And it really played a role in who I am as an artist. There would be times where I would do an interview, because I live fairly close to a lot of the venues in New York City. There would be times where I would do an interview like 3 or 4 hours before doors. I would run back home, drop my stuff off, and just paint, because I, talking to the artist would just give me a vision that it was either executed at that moment or lose it forever.
Nice. And then, you know, you've taken it to another level now, keeping up with the times with the, you know, technology. I mean, I saw you kind of laugh when I mentioned I got to push my Instagram and stuff, because, you know, I'm approaching 50. So it's like, you know, I'm trying to keep hip with all this stuff. I used to have to type out the interviews and stuff like that back in the day. But, you know, you've taken your art to another level with content creation using technology today. You want to talk about like what?
Well, I will say that when it comes to social media, I think you and I are in a fairly similar boat. When it comes to like, everybody was doing Twitch when the lockdown happened, and I still to this day don't know what that is. every single one of my fans were either doing Twitch or OnlyFans during the lockdown. Those were the two outlets. But I'm still trying to figure out what TikTok is and all that stuff. Really, it's Facebook and Instagram that has been my main source of exposure, or means of exposure, and YouTube for the interviews I do. But yeah, like it's always funny. I've always said, and it's gotten me kind of, it's been kind of like a rather, for lack of better words, a controversial opinion, but I've always said that content creators are basically the modern day artists, the way that like the Baroque artists or the neoclassicism artists played a role in their society back at their time. I personally don't think that mediums such as painting or sculpture has really inspired movements and, people to take a stand as often as it used to back then, because with modern technology, people have had many sources of knowledge and sources of inspiration otherwise. And I've always said that content creators, whether they are doing online journalism or they're doing, you know, filmmaking or music videos or anything like that, that's something that people are often very much attracted to. And that's what's very much inspiring to people. Talking to younger fans at metal shows, they would tell me how YouTube inspired them to pick up the guitar and start playing and then form a band and write their own music. And I've always said that content creators are really the ones who make the type of modern day influence that art did back in, you know, the 18 and 17 and 1600s and so on.
Yeah, it's been crazy too, like watching some of, you know, I feel like I'm so behind, and it's like, you know, they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, you know, and I'm trying to learn some more about like video editing and stuff like that. And, you know, I edit my own, you know, audio versions of the interviews I do and everything on Anchor and all that. So I'm trying to keep up, but you know, I see so many kids out there. It looks like major motion picture quality stuff, and they've done it all with their iPhone. It's like crazy.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible, actually, how it's done. And it's inspiring. I mean, I love watching other people like discover new things and help them take new ideas to the next level. It's always an exciting thing, not just to experience, but also to witness as well. I've always been intrigued by other artists just as much as I was intrigued by creativity in itself.
Yeah, I always like, you know, I was the type that always come up with all these like crazy ideas, but then executing was always, you know, tough for me. And then like the discipline and dedication, like to try and catch up with the technology, I'm usually just hitting my daughters up and saying, hey, how do I do that? Make this real on Instagram or whatever. How do I edit this? Or, oh, how do you get the lyrics to show up? You know, just asked somebody from my gym the other day who makes, you know, videos all the time. I was like, hey, how do you do that? And he sat there and showed me a little bit. And I was like, all right, cool. You know, but feel like so far behind where it's just like, I can set this up, you know, and we could see each other and it's recording and streaming and we're talking to each other. And then, hey, there you go.
Exactly.
For all the bells and whistles, you know, I'm still working on all that stuff.
I'm looking forward to the day when this type of technology is obsolete. Like I'm going to be 29 next week. So I remember just like, even in my short time of living, just witnessing so much technological advancement. I remember being in like middle school where if you had the flip phone with the keyboard and two screens, you were king back then. And now those phones are like artifacts. Those phones are like actual artifacts. A funny story, in my old house that I grew up in, I actually buried one of those in my backyard. So I do wonder now if people would actually find that in like 100 years from now and be like, what is this device? What is this artifact?
Yeah, I grew up when phones were still attached to a wall on a cord, you know, and if your girlfriend was calling or something, you could only go as far as the cord would let you away from your parents' listening ears, you know.
Man, that must have been awkward at times, depending on.
Oh, yeah, very much. But so, you know, we talked a little bit, too, about like, you know, the getting into this kind of world and this kind of business and how important it is to form relationships. And I, you know, was looking up more of your stuff to get ready for this. And I seen like, you know, you've had, you know, you've been able to interview bands like Disturbed and Lamb of God. And you actually give some of these musicians some homemade artwork and stuff, you know, which I'm sure they appreciated and helped like build those relationships. So you want to share a little bit about that journey?
Well, it was actually my therapist of all people who recommended that I share my artwork with the bands I see. Like, because my therapist is also an art enthusiast, and he's been very supportive over what I've done. And I was like asking him, like, you know, I love creating, but I don't know like how to get my artwork out there. Like, I just don't know. And he suggested to me, well, you go to concerts just as much as you go to museums. Why don't you just give these bands that you meet your artwork? And it kind of went in one ear and out the other. I even might have said that was stupid. But then one of my favorite vocalists and lyricists of all time, which is Jesse Leach of Killswitch Engage, he was doing like a DJ night by the same day, was doing like some sort of DJ night. And, you know, Killswitch Engage, a band as big as they are, it's not like I could walk backstage and hand them my painting. But doing a DJ thing at like at a dive bar, where there is no backstage, I was like, if there's a time to give an artist I really love a painting, it's that. And it wasn't really trial and it wasn't, I didn't consider it a trial and error thing to like, okay, I'm going to start off with this and then see how it goes from there. Cause he really was a vocalist that has actually like helped me through a lot of dark times, especially as a teenager. And giving him one of my paintings, I gave him a painting and he loved it. And we actually became a good friend since then. And he shared it, which was really nice of him to do. And then it kind of like clicked where I was just like, you know what? Maybe he was right. Maybe sharing my artwork. And of course, I try to make it as genuine as possible. I don't want to, you know, pick a random painting that I did, you know, 10 years ago and be like, here's a painting. I usually try to paint something specific for each artist, whether it would be a portrait or an interpretation of their logo or something like that. And it has been something that I've done rather regularly. And it does feel good. It if there would be times where if I wouldn't be working press at a show, but I would try to give artists the painting. And I was doing that before I started working in press. And I remember the fun days of like getting to the show, like during load-in and waiting outside, hoping to run into the artist there to give them the artwork. And it would succeed. You know, I did have to leave work, like ditch work early plenty of times to do it, but you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you brought up a good point with talking with your therapist and stuff too, because, and then, you know, how that relationship with Jesse came to be. I've heard some interviews with him in the past where he's pretty open about his own struggles with mental health and depression and stuff like that. And I know for like me, you know, I see a therapist as well who encouraged me to keep doing this to help, you know, me feel more comfortable in my own skin. I'm, you know, 13 years in recovery as well. So I don't have any numbing agents, you know, it's like, I gotta be my authentic self. And sometimes it's like, it's scary, you know, to go out there and be yourself sometimes. And I don't know, for me, if that was a suggestion, I'd be like, you know, in my head, the negative voice would come like, oh, they're not going to like this. They're not, my stuff isn't going to be good enough for them. And did you have that kind of inner battle before actually committing and presenting your art?
Well, like every artist, I think I speak for every creative person out there when I say that there's a lot of doubt and a lot of self-doubt and isolation and self-loathing and self-criticism that goes with every bit of creative endeavor you involve yourself in. So yeah, I mean, there was a lot of nerve-wracking. I actually remember I made a painting for Mastodon one time, and this was also before I started working in the press. I paid extra for a meet and greet to give them a painting. And Brent Hines is such a freaking character that, but I remember giving him a painting and he said, I love how it looks like you didn't put a lot of effort into it. And just the savagery in that alone just made me laugh my ass off. But, you know, like there's just, that is like a legitimate fear. My biggest fear is always when I, the most pressuring type of artwork is when I do like a commissioned portrait. Especially, in fact, just recently, a kind of individual commissioned me to paint a portrait of a good friend of hers that passed away. And doing something like that is always a lot of pressuring, because messing up the artwork in that regard, it's not even just that. You're also worried you might taint the memory of that person by messing up the artwork. So I think at this point, being insecure and being self-doubtful is just a price you have to pay with choosing the path of creativity. But you just got to deal with it. Like, at least for me, like that's just been the solution for everything. It's just kind of like dealing with it and kind of just making the most out of everything I could.
Yeah. I some of the advice that I've gotten too from my therapist is just like, well, you know, you can either try and fail or try and succeed, or you don't try at all and you never, you know, you got 50-50 chance if you try, you know, and then yeah. If you don't, you got 100% of failure. So it's like, yeah, you're right. And it's been, you know, I tend to try a lot more now.
Yeah. The moment you try to attempt anything, your 100% failure rate immediately goes down another percent. So one thing I've always done as a result of my anxiety was always second guess myself. Like every time I made a decision about anything, whether it would be what show I'm going to or what I'm having for dinner, I always second guess every single choice I make. And I always would surround myself with what ifs. But the one of the many lessons that I taught myself during the last 2 years with the pandemic was wondering what might happen is just a waste of time and not productive in any way, shape or form, which is kind of what led to the formation of the show that I'm doing. It's like, I've never really performed in front of an audience with the exception of like my elementary school talent show for when I was 11 for like 2 minutes. So I'm very nervous about it, but I'd rather lose sleep at night doing a terrible performance, which it's not going to be, it's going to be a great time, than lose sleep at night wondering what would have happened if I did that performance. So everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I wanted to get into. Obviously the main reason why we set this up to talk about your show, but real quick before we get into that, you know, we both shared, you know, our inner struggles, our anxiety, and you know, just what happens when we're stuck in our own head. And you mentioned the pandemic. I mean, you know, being isolated, you know, we already isolate ourselves, I think, sometimes, you know, or overthink things, like you were saying. And then when we were like into forced isolation, we had to find healthier ways to cope. So was like the vision of this show kind of like birthed during your COVID isolation?
Well, I will say, so I'll just simply put, the last 2 years of what happened, I can't believe it's been almost three, you know, March of 2020. It was funny because I live in the middle of Manhattan, and the area I live in Manhattan is surrounded by like six hospitals. So I was able to witness everything from the pandemic. I witnessed all the unrest that was happening because of all the protests. I watched like the world change before my very eyes and didn't even have to watch the news in order to witness it. The isolation was definitely deteriorating, and it was definitely it definitely gave me a lot of cursed memories. And even still to this day, like I'm always like had in the back of my mind, like I won't go into detail of what those fears were, but I will say that everything that kept me up at night and everything that gave me nightmares as a child pretty much occurred within the last 2.5 years. And it definitely put me in a relatively dark place, like everybody did. And I'm, you know, everybody went through craziness and hardships, whether it would be financially, emotionally, socially in general. Everybody went through hard times. For me, though, there's a famous saying, when we are at our worst, art is at our best. And I will say that the second that the lockdown happened, just I could not stop painting. It was funny, my art supplies store was actually considered essential. Considered an essential business, because I guess I don't know what qualifications they had, but they were able to be open during the lockdown. So nice. I would either go to the grocery store or I would go there. And I just couldn't stop. Like it wasn't like, how do I create today, or what do I paint today? It was really just, how do I stop? And I'll also point out that during the pandemic, one thing that kept things normal for me, or would be somewhat normal for me, is like I would get dressed like I was going to work every single day. So like what helped me was I would wake up and put on whatever attire I would normally wear on the way to work or something like that. And then instead of going to work, because I obviously couldn't, I would just paint all day. I would paint all day. And then I would also practice piano religiously. You know, I finally had time to learn a bunch of new songs to cover. And it really I guess you could say, you know, on an emotional level, this pandemic definitely knocked me on my ass. But in terms of a level of inspiration, it definitely opened up a lot of new things for me. There's a lot of stuff I would not have read if it would have been for the pandemic. There was a lot of stuff I wouldn't have discovered, period, hadn't it not been for that isolation. So everything does happen for a reason. And, you know, when everything is kind of being thrown at you at once, you don't know how to appreciate anything. But I look back at it and, you know, I was saying it at the time, and I drove a lot of people crazy with it, saying, I want to get back to normal. When is all this coming? You know, when are we going back to the way it is, and blah, 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 blah. And then I realized, like, you know what, if I had a rewind button, you know, back to the end of 2019 or 2020, I wouldn't change a thing. So.
Yeah. You know, I liked how you kept your routine. I mean, you got dressed like you were going to work, and you know, basically your job was, you know, painting or doing music and stuff. You kept a routine, which, you know,
definitely a lot of people kind of, you know, fell out of routines. Like I almost did myself, but luckily I keep myself surrounded with, you know, people that hold me accountable and stuff. And, you know, due to technology like this and Zoom, I was able to still create and connect. And, you know, I mean, so many new like relationships came into my life during that time. You know, I look back and I'm so like, you know, kind of grateful for going through, you know, what we went through. And the other thing that made me, you know, relook at things is like, you know, my daughters are all growing up now. They're too cool for school. They don't have time for dad to hang out anymore. So they're basically like roommates that pass through, you know. And then during the lockdown, they had no choice. We had to reconnect and rebuild our relationship and our connection. And it was kind of like a nice like reevaluation and reset of like, we get caught up in all the day-to-day rat race, you know. And it was like, I get to sit down now and focus on what's important and, you know, building this relationship or strengthening this relationship. You know?
And it's great. It's funny you mentioned that too. One other thing that I forgot to mention was I did, and it's not an exaggeration, I did literally thousands of interviews during the lockdown. Like, cause you know, unlike before when I would do an interview at a show and I would interview two or three bands on the bill or something like that, you know, now I had time thanks to Zoom. I would have an interview scheduled for 10 a.m., then 10:30, then 11. And whatever time I didn't have an interview scheduled is when I would be painting or practicing. And like, there was something about, I'll tell you this, I'll just straight up say the most metal thing I've ever done in my life was doing an interview with Cannibal Corpse during the lockdown while I had COVID. That just was my most metal moment right there. As well as interviewing Mayhem. Like, I interviewed so many of the darkest bands, and that too really provided a strike of inspiration as well. And really doing interviews was my only means of socializing as well. Like, I don't have a roommate and I live by myself. And contrary to what people think, New York is a very populated city, but it is also the loneliest place to live. And so, yeah. You know, by yourself doing these interviews was really just my only means of socializing. And it was pretty interesting seeing musicians, some of who I've admired for years and some who I just got to know. It was kind of weird seeing them almost in a similar situation that we are. You know, you and I, we don't go on tour. We don't play in front of an audience and we don't, you know, go to a studio to record regularly. You know, that's not just something we don't do. So it was weird, like, but at the same time, the musicians were kind of, that we would interview were kind of in a similar situation that we were. They couldn't go on tour. They couldn't go to the studio. It was considered dangerous for them to even practice together. So it almost just felt like we were all kind of like in a similar situation. So it kind of gave me a different, I would say, for lack of better words, relationship with the artists that I was interviewing. Because before, it would be at a show, I would talk to them for 10 minutes, say, great to meet you, pack my shit up and get out of the venue and make sure the security guard doesn't tackle me on the way out. But at this time, like, I would do the Zoom interview and we would talk for like an hour after I was done recording, because we were like, man, what's going on with the world and stuff. So doing interviews at that time was definitely a means of like socializing that I have and maybe you've had as well, that we wouldn't have experienced. You know, we couldn't have that type of experience at Incarceration Fest. You do your interview and then they had to go immediately to the table next to you and then go play. So
yeah, exactly. And you know, I know for me too, is like I said, I'm so behind the times with technology and everything. I just had my hand recorder and I was doing like a lot of phone interviews and stuff. And then, you know, the downtime forced me to, I got to build like a YouTube presence. So then, you know, a buddy of mine got me hip to this StreamYard and I'm doing StreamYard. And then, you know, being in recovery too, I couldn't meet with my regular meeting people. So then we're doing Zoom meetings and then I'm just connecting with other people that, you know, on a whole nother level that we wouldn't have connect. Cause we're all like the unknown. We're all kind of like, we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. We don't, you know, it made us all kind of focus on one day at a time, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it built so many positive relationships and helped me step up my game with this that, you know, I'm like I said, I'm kind of grateful that we had to go through that, you know, yeah. But how we're quick forgetters, and you know, things open back up and it's like off to the races again. I got to remind myself to take those times to be grateful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after, I don't think we're going to forget something that has been as long as like what we've been dealing with. Now that it's been happening for like 2.5 years, I doubt we're going to forget that anytime soon. But you're right. There is a lot of things that we do take for granted, like the story, which is a very long story that I doubt we have time for to talk about. But the story of how I got in the scene, I'll just sum up. I met all my best friends, because before I met people in the industry, I was always hanging out with the underground, and it was being involved in the underground that also introduced me to a lot of people. Yeah. Have I been standing in a completely different spot, literally a half a second later, I don't know where I would be right now. It's because somebody fell down in the mosh pit in front of me, and I helped that individual up, that I discovered the New York City metal scene where I started cutting my teeth into. And I do like wonder, like, man, if there was one other person in front of me at that time, would that have even happened?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, that the New York scene in general, like, you know, I'm here in Cleveland, Ohio, but it's influenced me. And when I first started doing this, because a lot of the, like, you know, when we're getting started, nobody sends you like, you know, the big bands right away, you know. You got to go through a bunch of bands you haven't heard of before, or some you have that are easier to become friends with. Like, I got a lot of good friends in the New York hardcore scene that I still talk to today, you know, and they've helped me, you know, meet other people. And, you know, even before Publicis, is like, it's forming those relationships. And you said, but I don't know, you know, I can look back at so many different instances where it's just like, wow, how did this happen? Like, I can get caught up in the woes me of today when I do the comparison game. I can compare myself up, I can compare myself down to people, and you know, where my journey has brought me. But when I actually look back, it's just like, man, that's where I'm like, okay, there's a reason. Like, everything happens for a reason, like you said. And I'm just like, yeah, more living in gratitude today than I would have been in the past. And
oh, you were saying?
No, go ahead, because I was going to lead into your show.
I was just going to say, one of my favorite movies of all time, which I think is very overhated, is The Butterfly Effect. And just like the idea of like going back in time and just making a slightly different decision to change an outcome could change the whole future. I don't try to focus too much on what was, and I always try to concern myself with what is. But it definitely is like, sometimes it's dangerous and sometimes it's unhealthy, but other times it's inspirational. I love going down like rabbit holes. Like, I wasn't supposed to be at that incarceration festival. I managed to have a friend who was staying at the nearest hotel, and I managed to be able to go there. But I was this close to like having to be like, listen, I can't make it out there, sorry. So, but if I did not know that person back then, who I met literally like 2 months before incarceration, who knows where I would be? And then you and I probably wouldn't have met. So
yeah,
it's one of those like rabbit hole scenarios. I always love intriguing. Like, I even go back with like friends who I've known for years, and we always talk about like how we met and say, man, if I went to the bathroom at that time, would we have even known each other? So
now, I mean, I keep having to remind myself how young you are, but I know this, you've been alive during this show, obviously, but you ever watch the show Lost?
No.
Dude, go back and check out that series. It's like totally everything we're talking about right now.
I'll definitely,
you know, and how we like connect, and, you know, first time I watched it, I was still kind of into my drinking and using. So it was still a pretty cool show to watch. But it's like when I went back with a couple of years of sobriety and more like of a spiritual life, it was just like everything we talk about, the little decisions we make and how many people we pass by in life or look back and say, man, we were hanging out together and we said hi here and blah, 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 you know, and it's amazing.
Every human you encounter is your friend. And I say the same thing even with your enemies. Everybody you encounter is your teacher. That saying, every man is your teacher, is one of my favorite sayings of all time.
Yeah, I totally agree. And so I wanted to bring us to more about your show that's coming up here, September 15th, An Intimate Night of Darkness. Let's address that title. What was that inspiration for you?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I was winging it with that title. Just 100% winging it. I was just like, I was very turned off by the idea, saying I've always been kind of like turned off by an intimate night with so-and-so artist. I don't know. It just sounded like too, I don't know. And anybody else who does it, it's no judgment. Just for me, I just couldn't do it. One thing that I really enjoyed witnessing lately outside of metal concerts was these things called candlelight concerts. Maybe you've seen ads for them on YouTube or whatever, but they actually are very beautiful. And these aren't like the McDonald's menu. They are actually like how they're advertised. Like there's candles everywhere and there's either an orchestra or a pianist, a jazz concert and all this. And I've always said, like, man, I've always wanted to do that. Like, that's the type of stuff I would like to play. As much as I love, you know, what Slipknot does, and I love what, you know, all these metal artists do, to me, something like that is always the type of performance I wanted to do. And at Lucky 13, where pretty much I found the New York City metal scene, it was where I did my first podcast. It's been the source of many places for artistic inspiration. It was the first place I booked a show. So just to do a performance there was just without question. Like, if I was ever going to do a performance, I don't care if I'm standing up on stage clapping, like, it's going to be at Lucky 13. And their owner, Jeff, huge shout out to them, was basically like, dude, like, you play piano. I would play piano very casually. I would just post whatever cover I learned on my Facebook page to show. And people were just telling me, dude, do one performance, do like a recital or something like that. And I would just be like, eh. And after a couple friends nagged me about it enough, I finally just caved. And so this show is, I'm doing about, I think, 10 songs, cover songs on piano. There's going to be a lot of those candles. They're fake, obviously. I'm not burning anything down. And I'll also be selling some of the artwork I created throughout the pandemic. I don't have merch, so I'll just sell like prints that I've made. And it's going to be like a fun little thing. A lot of people told me that they're going to show up to it, which really means the world to me. The support that I've been getting throughout it has been truly remarkable. And I would be lying to you if I told you that I wasn't nervous for the show. You know, it's, again, my first time really performing in front of a live audience since I was like 11. So it really was like the encouragement that I've gotten for this, I'm truly grateful for. And I've just been practicing for hours and hours a day, getting the set down to a T. That's really, and as for the Intimate Night of Darkness, I guess the darkness part, I mean, I wouldn't exactly call it an intimate night of blessing if you're covering Sepultura and death and, you know, Gojira on the piano.
Now do you have an outfit picked out and everything yet? Because I'm envisioning the old like Bugs Bunny when he came out to play and he had the long like tuxedo top that he like flipped the back to sit down.
That would be an incredible I doubt that. I think being that, you know, it is already like, you know, again, the first thing of the performance that I'm doing and whatnot, I think dressing with whatever's comfortable is really just the way to make sure that I get the songs right, which is the main priority. It also does get pretty toasty on that stage. So if I wear a suit,
especially with all them candles.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty toasty up on that stage. So I think just a nice t-shirt and my usual ripped up jeans. I did think about going the way I dressed for the My Chemical Romance concert with the black button up shirt, a red tie and eyeliner, but I ain't doing any covers of MCR, so it wouldn't really fit.
And like, what was that, you know, how was it learning to play some of these songs through piano? Like, what was that evolution like?
It's really exciting because obviously, you know, like Sepultura, I'm covering a Sepultura's Desperate Cry, which is off their Arise album. Like that, you know, it can't really be fathomed on piano, but I have a friend who plays in this orchestral quartet called Seven Sons, and they are doing Dillinger Escape Plan covers on violin and viola. So I like, it kind of just inspired me. I was like, okay, if they could pull that off, maybe a lot of these heavy songs with these kick-ass solos, I could maybe try to transcribe on my own. And, you know, their piano does have its limits, so you can't hit everything note for note. And you only have two hands. So, it's just really fun. It's exciting when you kind of like it's almost kind of like cracking a code. You just like a lot of the songs that I learned how to play on piano, I just discovered by accident because I hit the right note. And I was like, wait a minute, that's the same note in this solo. Okay, let me see that. That's how I started learning the Guar song. I'm covering Sick of You by Guar. And I just, that one right. note that opened up with, I'm like, wait a minute, I played that on piano by accident. Oh, da na 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 na. So like it just, when you, finding the first note is always the hardest part. And then it kind of just naturally progresses from there.
That's awesome, man. I'm excited for it. Like I said, when I was reading the concept up behind it, you know, I mean, I definitely wanted to, you know, catch up with you, but to hear you explain this whole process, it's like, if I was out in the area, dude, I'd be attending for sure. But for people like me that aren't able to go, is there going to be somebody recording this?
Well, I'd imagine that there's going to be people taking videos of it. And it'll probably be all up on my Facebook page and I'll share all of it. You could find, if you want to like see anything that I'm actively doing, Instagram is always the best way to keep up to what I'm doing, whether it is art related or music related. My Instagram is Alexander Haber, all one word, all lowercase, no underscores or anything like that. It's just Alexander Haber, all one word. And I'll definitely like, I'm going to have friends take videos and whatnot. And they'll be shared as reels and stuff like that. I don't think I'm having like anybody professionally shoot it. You know, anything can happen.
Yeah. I definitely want to hear this Guar, Sick of You on piano.
definitely. I'll put up a full version on Facebook, when I can. I've been playing snippets of each song that I plan on doing for like 30 seconds, just as like teaser videos to help promote it. I'm going to probably upload another one tonight since the show's 2 weeks from today, but, it's very exciting. You know, I was very hesitant at first and, you know, like anybody's first performance, there is some nerves going in it, but I'm very excited and I'm honored to be playing on a stage that all my friends have played on and playing in front of some amazing people. Like the support that I've been getting for this is something that like I'll never forget. It really is just one of the greatest things in the world.
Yeah, that's great, man. Well, hey, we've almost been on an hour and it's been good catching up with you and stuff.
Great, man.
You got a little bit more time for me to ask you some of the questions I normally ask guests I have on?
Yeah, sure. I got 10 more minutes or so.
All right. Who are your, like we're talking about music and our love of music. Is there a particular song that you can narrow down that's been like one of your go-tos that's on your playlist whenever you need some extra inspiration?
So one of my favorite discoveries, because during the pandemic, I was also very attached to music. And you ever had that experience where like you think of a band you like, but you don't know who they are or whatever? I finally found the band that I was always looking for. It's a suicidal black metal band called Life Lover, which basically their music describes every bit of negative emotion, whether it would be depression, anger, anxiety. Their whole catalog has just been my, like, if I can't think of what to listen to, I kind of resort to that. But outside of metal, I've been really into movie soundtracks lately. One thing that kind of helped me cope with the times that we're living in was I would listen to like soundtracks from Hans Zimmer or Two Steps from Hell or Thomas Bergeson and just like listen to it as I walk the streets, and it just made everything in life just more cinematic. So that's also been like my go-to. And just really just keeping up with whatever's been released. Like there, I will say that some of the best albums I've ever heard in my life came out during these times.
Oh yeah, I agree. A lot of people getting their own therapy, working things out, you know.
Definitely.
What class do you feel should be mandatory before graduating high school today?
Wow. Oh man, that's what class should be mandatory before graduating high school. I don't know, actually. I guess maybe a technology class, like learning as much about modern technology as you can, because, you know, I definitely didn't have those classes at first. And for any class that I did have, I kind of took it for granted. It would just be like an elective that I was required to take or something like that. So I just think any class that keeps us up to date with technology is good. But really, I think any class that promotes creativity should also be. I don't believe in making creative classes mandatory, because I think if you try to force anybody into any form of art, they're going to end up hating it. So yeah, the technology thing is my safest last resort for that.
Gotcha. And then three people who've inspired you or you can credit for making you the person you are today.
So Gerard Way from My Chemical Romance is definitely one of them. Lacuna Coil, they have two singers, so it's kind of hard to just, you know, that would already take three, but just that band in general is my favorite band of all time. And really just played a role in 90% of who I am with a lot of the things I discovered that I like. So Lacuna Coil is definitely one. And going back to Life Lover, that was, you know, the artist I discovered. And Life Lover's not around anymore. One of their members passed away, and he was like the main songwriter. But the singer of that band, Kim Carlson, he does like a bunch of different black metal projects, and he's just a massive inspiration for what I do as well. And I know I'm cheating by mentioning two more people, but the two most important people in my life inspirationally are my parents, because if it wasn't for their encouragement and their support, anything that I enjoy doing or any aspiration I would have wouldn't go anywhere. So really my parents are the most important people in my life.
Nice. And then any causes or organizations that you support and encourage others to check out?
Well, my family and I always donate to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. I mean, that's just a charity that's always been close to my heart. There's been a lot of mental health awareness campaigns, like the UROC Foundation, who also was at incarceration when we were there. There's Hope for the Day. There's a lot of great like mental health awareness and suicide prevention programs that really speak near and dear to me as well. I'm trying to think of like some more charities, and I feel kind of awful that I can't think of many off the top of my head right now, but that is definitely one. And I'd imagine you would know, but anything that could support our veterans is always something I'm happy to help support.
Man, thanks. And then, speaking of our veterans, any message you have for our military members that are currently serving overseas?
I'm just beyond honored and thankful that I get to call myself a fellow American, as those people who are some of the bravest people and strongest people can imagine. My best friend Christian was in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and just the stories that he's told me has really been inspirational and inspiring, and I'm thankful every minute of every day for our troops, and every time somebody tells me they're a veteran, I always want to know their story and what they aspire to be from there.
Nice. And then favorite toy as a child?
Any game system I could get my hands on.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like things have changed with, with the newer generation, but as much as you were enjoying like, the soundtracks on video games, I figure that would be, you know, your answer.
If it was a box with a controller, I would enjoy it.
Nice. And then did you have what would you want your legacy to be, you know, when you're no longer with us?
I mean, I would be dead, so I really wouldn't care. But I just hope, and I'm like this with every person I meet. I remember people for their merits and not their demerits. I remember, I always like to assume the best, and assuming the worst, we assume our worst character. So I like to assume the best in everybody. And, you could think whatever you want. I believe everybody should think for themselves, but, I hope maybe people could do the same for me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, going back to like our troops, and I know why I served and stuff, and so everybody could have, you know, a place at the table and have a right to be heard. And we don't have to see eye to eye or agree on everything, man. But, you know, you have a right to be heard. And, it, the whole cancel culture thing, you know, has been kind of like, how do we grow and evolve together or become, you know, how do we solve any of the issues that we're complaining about if we're silencing another side because we don't like what they have to say, you know? Got to be able to be heard from all sides, you know, and everybody has that right, you know.
I've always cared more about being nice than being right. So, if there's ever like a conversation that I'm not interested in hearing, or, you know, I'm always told people if I want their opinion, I'll ask for it. And, you know, I just tend to, you know, just listen to, I like to keep my mouth shut and eyes and ears open with everything that comes my way.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, hey, Alex, man, it's been great catching up with you. And it's
been a great time, man. Thank you.
Yeah, and looking forward to catching some of those reels. I wish I was going to be out there to actually experience it live, but I'm excited for you. And yeah, man, keep doing your thing, and we'll keep in touch.
Absolutely. Looking forward to seeing you when I return to Ohio.
W story brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
CEO of the Reserve Center, Bruce is talking to Reserve Center CEO, and said, hey, you got a vehicle that I can get my guys around the base with? Because they didn't give us any transportation down there. And this bus line that runs around the base once an hour or whatever is just crazy. And he goes, well, we got the troop carrier in the back.
This worthless piece of shit back here. Goes,
yeah, well, didn't even work.
Nothing works on it. Yeah.
Sounds good. So I jump
we'll
in.
We'll take
Bruce
it.
And I, Bruce and I take it. We go back to the pier. We've commandeered this vehicle. I take the guys up to the beach, and then I take the guys. I stayed at. I didn't drink anything all night long. Took the guys up to the freaking club.
Yeah.
I got a truckload in the back of the freaking truck. I'm driving back, and all of a sudden, blue
light.
And these guys are going, oh, it's a female. Ask her to give you the cuffs and cuff you down, chief. You know, or radar. Ask her to get. I said, shut the fuck up.
You guys, she's like, you guys got no lights. You got no brake lights. Right. You got nothing. We're like, yeah, why not?
I said, my engineers, I got the vehicle today. My engineers are going to go over tomorrow, and I'll bring it by your freaking post and show you tomorrow that all the lights work. When we got back, they followed us back to Fleet Landing.
Yeah.
We got on the Liberty boat, went back to the MPS. We got out there, and we said, okay, Mike, you, Timmy, first thing tomorrow morning, get the 8 boats, get them lights working on that goddamn truck.
All it was fuses.
You guys park this mechanical asshole and don't drive it again.
Then we get the lights all running, and I got a whole load of people in the back, and I'm driving down that road, and all of a sudden, bam, the hood pops up. And I'm like, oh, shit, I can't see, you know, and I'm, oh, God, I hope not. So I pulled off the side of the road. That was scary.
Yeah.
You know?
Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening to another story time from the VFW Hall, brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
Thank you for listening once again to today's Boondoggle Radio Show. Please be sure to check out our website, domaincle.com or todaysboondoggle.com, for more shows and check out our archives. Follow us on social media at Today's Boondoggle on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter for more information about this podcast. And please support us on www.anchor.fm/todaysboondoggle, as well as on our GoFundMe and Venmo. Be sure to subscribe, comment, download, and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and all the other podcast platforms out there. Please email us with any questions, suggestions, and comments via todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. Leave us some 5-star reviews and help spread the word. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for tuning into this week's Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news and information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for supporting, sharing, and tuning into today's Boondoggle.